Pigweed here from Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crow Hill. Today we drink cheap beer and discuss mutual combat. Hello and welcome to Beer in Conversation with Pigweed and Crow Hill. Good evening, Crow Hill.
Good evening, Pigweed.
So, what is on your mind?
Well, you know, we're a long ways into this election cycle now. We've got Donald Trump versus Joe Biden.
Right.
And, you know, I'm so sick of all the campaigning and everything. I've been wondering, what if the two of them just duked it out? What if we just put the two of them in a cage match?
Right.
Yeah, and just said, whoever comes out alive, that's the president.
I mean, and then think of the campaign finances. What would you do with all of that money, right? You could do some... good with the amount of money that's
exactly.
not being spent.
All that money could be spent on other things to help people. That's right. Exactly.
So it would be humanitarian, except for the fact that one of them would be maimed.
Beaten to a pulp,
but
right?
But that's fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it is. Actually, Joe might want to do this because if it's based on mental acuity, he'd probably have a better chance.
In a physical contact.
Like he did with the corn pop. Back in his lifeguarding days with his hairy legs.
With his hairy legs, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know, all right.
Okay.
I think this is as good a way as any to determine who is who. So,
why do we have eight
glasses
of beer in
and we normally drink a beer and we review it.
Yes.
Well, now we're drinking eight.
Eight? Well, but not eight each.
No, four each.
Four each, yeah.
In a blind taste test of four beers.
And now there's an origin to this.
I saw
a list of the best cheap beers.
Yeah.
And shared that with you. And we thought, you know, we can't drink all 10 of the best cheap beers. So we picked four and we said, okay, we're gonna drink them and see of the four, blind taste test, what do we like the best?
Okay, so in no particular order, in fact, in order we don't even know what it is.
We don't even know what the order is because our special assistants came and mixed them up.
But they are National Bohemian, Rolling Rock, Budweiser, and Tecate. Well, let's start on the right-hand side.
Sure, all right.
And we'll just, without looking...
Right, no looking at the numbers. So the kinds of things that we're looking for, looking at cheap beers, we're looking at how much malt, how much sweetness do we get. But there's also a lot of cheap beers have a lot of rice in them or a lot of corn.
Yes.
So you're looking for that
adjuncts,
kind of flavor.
Yeah,
adjuncts.
Say.
That's right. So
which cheap beer do I prefer? All right. Well, these are my numbers. Well.
So we are pretty bad at this.
We are bad at this. Okay, so now that we've had all four of our beers and we wrote our predictions down on what they are, how did we do?
We did terrible.
We did terrible.
Because we don't drink cheap beer.
None of us got any of those right.
Not a one.
And there's not a lot of distinction between them. You know, there's not zero in the aroma.
Right.
Maybe some slight...
A little more maltiness in some of them.
Yeah. A little bit more sweetness.
Yeah.
You know, none of them are bad. Wouldn't say that's awful. You know, on
none
a hot summer day, that's fine. But I would say at the end of the now that I'm looking at the numbers on the cups, looking at the list, where was Tecate in there?
I'm thinking Tecate might be my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the four of them, I'm thinking Tecate might be my favorite.
You know, in Mexico, if you order a Tecate, it comes in a can, and they automatically bring you salt and lime.
Not on
a Corona. There's no lime in the Corona in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get the can, or the idea that you squeeze the lime into the beer,
right,
which is also going to get onto the can as you accidentally do it,
right,
and then you sprinkle salt on the top of that can.
Huh.
So as you're drinking, you're getting a little bit. But only with Tecate, and like I said, you don't even have to ask for it.
Wow.
And they'll bring it for you no matter what.
Of these four, Natty Bo, Rolling Rock, Budweiser, Tecate, I'm going with Tecate.
They're all...
But we have to admit that we totally were
totally
terrible. We were totally terrible at predicting which one was which.
Unless our assistant...
Mess things up. Granddaughters
would never mess things up
like that.
So now I'm just going to blend it all together and make one beer out of it while I fight you.
Right. So today's conversation is about combat, and
Well, what got me jazzed about it was I was downstairs in the only cool room in the house. It was 97 degrees outside on Saturday. And I said, Friday, and I said, well, this looks interesting. It was called Home Game.
Home Game, right?
And it was a collection of very localized sports. Sports that are only played in one place.
Okay.
And what did you think about Calcio Fiorentino?
I watched that one.
That's
and that was so it's a very old
definitely
game.
The best one of the of all of them. But go ahead.
Very old game. Apparently, like the Romans made it up or something like. I mean, it's a very very old game, and they've been playing it
since the Renaissance, since 1580 or something like
that. Yeah, but I mean, they implied that the game, the origins of the game, were much earlier than.
Well, I mean, it's got a real gladiator look to it.
Yeah,
they said Julius Caesar founded the city.
Right.
And the origins, they say, you know, who knows if it's true or not, that they were under siege by who knows, you know, at that time.
People were under siege all the time.
In 1500, there was no Italy at the time, right? There was the Venetian state,
right,
and the Florentian. So anyway, they they were all their own thing. So they, as an expression of how we're not really that bothered by the siege.
Right.
We're going to play a game.
We're going to play a game.
And but this not game, a nice game.
It's not a nice game. It's sort of like rugby where you fight.
It's rugby, MMA, and bare knuckle boxing.
Yes. So that the funny thing about it is like the guys in the back, you're trying to score like any other game. You're trying to get
Get the rules out. So it's 50 it's 27 men on each side.
Right, which is a lot.
It is a lot.
Not a big pitch.
No. Maybe half the size of a football field.
Right, with a net that spans the entire goal line.
And it's about, maybe 2.5-3 feet tall.
Maybe a little taller than that, but yeah, it's a net that runs the whole length of the line
and
on
so
both sides.
So, hey, what's the big deal? All you gotta do is get the ball in the net, not a little, like you say, not a hockey goalie net, not a soccer goalie net,
right.
It's the whole
the
width
whole
of the thing.
Yeah.
How hard can it be to get the ball
except that the murderous other team is trying to beat you up to stop you from
except
doing
you can punch anybody you want in the face and kick him in the privates and do anything you want.
I know. You just so and there are certain players whose job it is to like bust up the other line by any means.
Yeah.
They're boxing. They're standing there duking it out boxing.
Because once a guy goes down, he can't get up until a goal is scored.
Right.
So there's a tip off. There's like a basketball toss up.
Yeah.
Whoever gets the ball throws it to the back of the line and then just watches the front line men
fight. The front line men go out and fight until they can make a hole.
Until they clear the.
So the guy with the ball
can
run. It is totally nuts. And you look at these guys.
Yes.
They were some serious dudes. I mean, they were very muscular, very ripped and very, very strong.
And scary.
I would not want to fight any one of those guys.
No, and so there are a couple of great aspects to it. Just the whole willing to punch guys in the face in order to advance the ball. Love that.
Yeah.
I love to prevent you from just trying to wing it.
Yeah.
If you miss, the other guy gets half a point.
That's right. That was pretty interesting.
I thought that would
because otherwise you'd just be throwing from all the way across the
field.
You'd be throwing,
you're like, I'm not getting punched in the face to get the ball down there. But now that your teammates are like,
I just
got punched in the face four times so that you can run up there and you're going to throw it from back here.
No, you can't do that. Yeah. So that is an interesting twist in the rules. And these guys, some of them come away with broken legs, you know, broken ribs.
Yeah, okay, so as you can imagine, it's only once a year.
I think they play two games.
Yeah, there are only four teams.
Right.
So there's two games and then the final, and the championship.
Right, yeah. So two games to winnow out. Like,
and they said, you never actually play against the same guys because there's so many guys injured from the first game that they're not going to be there for the second game.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, and so this is the other thing I love. You have to, the city, there are four historic districts.
Yeah, and you have to have been born there.
And you're on that team for life.
That's right.
You can never switch teams.
Yeah. That's one thing I don't like about, you know, local football teams. So okay, you're on the Baltimore team, but you grew up in Hawaii.
I agree totally. I always thought, and you know, I think Major League Soccer tried to do something like this,
yeah,
where you kind of get dibs
right
on the player from your local area.
Yeah, maybe it should be like where you went to high school or something.
Yes.
Like you have to be in high school in a certain area and those
Because then
the
you're
people...
always, you're actually rooting for literal hometown guys.
Yes.
Guys who...
Because otherwise, what is the real connection? What connection do I have with the
like,
local
yeah,
team?
Yeah, we're totally into this guy and he's from, and he's only here for... Till the season's gone, then he goes to Florida where he grew up.
Exactly.
And,
it's really weird.
So,
I do like that local
aspect to it.
Yeah.
Yes, getting punched in the face and advancing the ball and you know, the story. And even the clothes, the leggings that they wear are clearly Renaissance clothes.
Yeah,
the referees look like, steeped in history and culture.
One thing I like about
and punching
this,
in the face.
One thing I like about this is it reinforces a theory that I have that the social good of sports mm-hmm. is to train men for combat. That's what sports is really about.
I agree. It is to, for men to display their ability on the battlefield.
Yeah.
In a way that's nobody's getting hurt.
Nobody's gonna die. Right. The idea is you have to show loyalty to your team.
Right.
You have to show the ability to cooperate, the ability to take orders to a certain degree, and the ability to be willing to be hurt.
Yes, and skills, you know, like, the original Roman, the original Greek Olympics, right? You've got, throwing spears, you've
right.
got wrestling
yeah.
guys,
yeah.
and then even if like, medieval jousting games,
yeah.
right? These are all skills that are clearly...
And they're all clearly related to...
To warfare.
To warfare, yes.
Yeah.
Now, soccer is not as clearly related to warfare, but I think the same sort of thing applies, because
yeah.
you're learning...
Right, the further you get away... As civilization moves along,
yeah.
the sports that come along are less...
They're less
but,
combative. But still, generally speaking, the purpose of sport is to teach men to face pain... To tough it out,
mm-hmm.
to fight for their team,
yeah.
to be loyal, to, you know, to work with the team, to follow directions, all those kinds of things that you want in a soldier, right? So I think there is a close correlation between sport and warfare.
Right. And what we're discussing today are those sports that actually do involve
pain. They're sort of, yeah.
They do. You,
kind of
both people entering in know that at least one of the two parties
yeah.
is going to come out injured.
Now, when you play football, there is a chance that you're going to come out injured.
Right.
But it's not a huge chance, but
yeah.
it is a chance. Yeah.
But,
soccer and everything
but,
else.
But what Calcio Fiorentino.
Yeah, you're pretty unlikely.
People are getting hurt.
Yeah, it's
that's
like
for sure.
Half the team is probably going to be carried off.
Now, can we discuss Mensur?
Okay, yeah, this one takes it up a level.
So this, or academic fencing, you feel like, well, what could be...
Academic,
what could be...
They've got a book of Greek and Latin in one hand, and
be
and
safer
than academic...
academic fencing.
I know. It's a bunch of geek scholars fencing, just for fun,
just
right?
Just for fun. Well, so let me tell you how I came about to... this came to my attention. I'm reading a book about the diplomats that were living in... During the rise of the Nazis,
mm-hmm.
living in Berlin,
mm-hmm.
he's a diplomat, and mentions Rudolf Diels, who is the head of the Gestapo. So it's interesting because you're learning about the characters, Goebbels and all these guys,
yeah.
through the eyes of people who are seeing them for the first time on the ground level, not expecting this party to really go anywhere because they're kind of nuts, and at some point. Cooler heads will prevail, and these guys will never rise
right.
to any
yep.
importance. And Rudolf Diels comes in, and he's just described as, you know, this rugged good looks with the scars that many young men of his station have due to fraternity fencing.
Yeah.
So just drops it there. I'm like, okay. Brings it up again later on. I'm like, wait a minute. What is this?
With scar? Yeah, fraternity fencing. I thought fraternities just sat around and drank beer. And,
right.
Yeah.
So there's this style of fencing where you are protected from the neck, arm, actually everything except for your face is protected, and you're wearing metal mesh goggles.
To protect your eyes.
To protect your eyes. So you think of fencing as a lot of dodging and parrying, right?
Yeah.
Zero. In fact, that's the point. There is no, you don't move, you don't jump around, you don't flinch, and there's really no point scoring, or winner or loser. And you don't try to avoid getting cut, because you will get cut.
Right.
And it will be cut in the face.
Right.
and it's to stoically absorb the cut.
Wow.
So it's clink, 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 and then there are two, like, judges on each side who do have face coverings and swords, and they jump in and stop when somebody's cut. Step back, the physician examines them, and they come back in. And, yeah, so, the thing is, so when you see, you know that like, 19th century German war vet with the facial scar look?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what it's from. It's not from war. It's from fraternity fencing.
All right.
And they allow, they don't particularly want these scars to heal nicely.
Yeah, they want the scar.
They want the scar.
Yeah, there's, I'm not positive I remember this correctly, but I think Duke Leto in the Dune movie has a nice scar.
He's wearing
the military uniform. I think he's got a good scar.
Yes, right. A monocle, a military uniform, and a facial scar. Yeah. But, yes, the origin of this facial scar is actually...
It's not from the trenches in World
War
One.
It's not from the trenches. But you can imagine, right? The guy, same thing with the Calaccio Florentino guys.
Yeah.
So, right, there'd be like a certain buzz in the bar when a guy goes in. You elbow the guy next to you, go... That guy plays for the red team. The coach, like, oh, all right. Yeah. So you know, right? So says something about the guy.
Yeah.
Same thing. You come in your military uniform and your face scar. You're like, people. You know that other people know
that you're a tough guy.
Something about you.
Yeah. So did I ever tell you the story about the time I beat the Maryland State fencing champion?
You did not.
No.
How did that story not come up yet?
So I was
in chess or
No. Oh. In fencing. I was like 15. And I was at the Maryland Renaissance Festival back when, like, the first or second year there was such a thing as the Maryland Renaissance Festival.
Oh, all right.
And they had this booth where you could fence other people. And you'd put on the fencing jacket and the fencing helmet, and they'd show you how to do it. And the thing was, they would put a balloon on your chest.
Okay.
And whoever popped the other guy's balloon would win, right? So I went up to the booth, and just by myself, and I said, I'd like to do this. And they said, who do you want to fence? And I said, I'll fence you. And the guy said, I'm the Maryland State fencing champion.
Right.
I said, well, that's okay. I mean,
you could have fenced a friend that came
with you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like,
I could have fenced a friend, but I didn't have anybody with me.
Okay.
So I just said, I'll just fence you. And he said, oh, okay, whatever. So I paid my money, and we lined up, and he gets into his proper form. Right. And I come swinging at him like a Viking barbarian, just whoosh, 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 hacking and hacking, and I popped his balloon.
That's fantastic. And then, yeah, because he's thinking, that's not proper fencing.
Exactly. He's like, you're breaking the rules. So then he said, okay, now, we got to do this again. He gave me a second go at it. And then once he knew what I was at, he cut me up easily.
I see.
But I totally took him by surprise and beat him the first time.
All right, so So, in looking at the history of this mensur, I guess M-E-N-S-U-R, and what that is, it's the distance between you and the other guy. So you're not allowed to move your feet. So it's whatever that
you can't back
has
away.
To do.
You can't back away from the pain.
You cannot back away, and you can't right. And the thing is right. And even flinching, trying to avoid injury. That's the shame that you bring upon your fraternity.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. And now what is it? What do they do? Beer pong championships between fraternities?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
And they want additional safe spaces.
Right.
Yeah.
A place to go cry if you're not.
So they kind of back it up to dueling for honor, and then became. You were expected in your fraternity to fence somebody at some time during your time, but you weren't always necessarily offended with somebody and had to throw down the gauntlet and say, you, sir, I challenge.
Right.
So that's why they organized.
Okay. And,
so you're not fighting for honor anymore. You're just
fighting for fighting.
Fighting for fighting.
Which is a good thing. You know, I used to take martial arts, and you would fight other people. You didn't want any harm for them or anything.
Yeah.
You were just fighting to learn... Fighting.
That was the mentality. So they backed it up and they said, like during the 16th and 17th centuries, during the Reformation Wars and the Thirty Years' Wars, when a major part of the German population was killed, public life was brutal and students killing each other in the street was not uncommon.
Wow. Wow.
Think about that for
Romeo and Juliet, your safe spaces. That's right.
Romeo and Juliet. No, we don't mean physically safe. We're already physically safe. We mean safe like we don't want to hear things in our ears that hurt our feelings.
That's right. Because words are violent.
And these guys are carrying swords.
Exactly.
Because somebody could die at any moment.
Yes. Now, apparently the tie that we have today.
Yeah.
The origin of the tie was people would wrap these cloths around their neck to protect their neck from getting cut.
That's the place you don't want to get cut.
Right. So the tie is like a leftover from a time when you could be walking around in the street and somebody could come up and, you know, try to cut your neck.
Interesting. And there was a time when it was not only a great idea, but fashionable, right? I mean, you just wore a sword.
Yeah.
That's part of your outfit,
right.
And then as things cleared up a little bit, as things got a little more civilized, that's how then we got from just stabbing people on the streets randomly to dueling to organized fighting for its own sake.
Right.
You know, sort of a progression along the lines.
So what about dueling? What's going on with dueling?
Right, so let's back it up a little bit. Yeah, so the origin of this is dueling, and it's choosing, right, to fight usually as a result of an insult.
Right, so somebody would say, you've offended my honor because you insulted my mother or my wife or whatever, and then you're going to challenge this person to a duel, and you're going to go out onto some secret place because dueling is almost always illegal.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a second who's going to make sure that things are done according to the rules, right? And then you go out there and you follow the rules and somebody wins and somebody loses. But the thing about dueling...
Well, you mean broadly or sword dueling versus gun dueling?
So dueling's been around for a really long time.
Yeah.
Obviously, there was sword dueling before there was pistol dueling.
So let's bring it up to date to pistol dueling.
Yeah, so pistol dueling, there isn't... pistol dueling nowadays, it would be insanity, because the pistols are so stinking accurate that the first guy to shoot would win.
Yeah, but this couldn't have been, this had to be, well, what were they using? They weren't flintlocks.
So the pistols have been around for a long time.
Right. But the earliest duel, definitely before revolver.
A matchlock pistol. So it's not a flintlock. In other words, the hammer doesn't hit flint, make a spark like the... light the gunpowder, fire the bullet. Instead, a matchlock has like a fuse. It's almost like a cannon that you hold in your hand. You light the fuse, and you have to kind of stand there and hold it aiming until it finally goes off. It's not anywhere near as good as a flintlock. But if you're
marching 10 paces and then turning around, you're not waiting for the fuse to go down. So it couldn't have been those duels. Had to be not necessarily revolver, but what they had, probably caps?
Probably flintlocks. Well, they might have had caps. They might have been like modern black powder rifles, but they probably were flintlocks.
Alexander Hamilton?
Those were flintlocks, yeah.
Alexander Jackson?
Right, those were flintlocks. So as soon as you pull the trigger, the hammer comes down, makes a spark, lights the gunpowder, fires the bullet.
Okay.
Yeah. And there might have been a half second delay.
Yeah, half second.
But it wasn't like the really primitive guns people used to use, where you'd kind of light a fuse and stand there holding it and wait until boom finally goes off.
Yeah. Right. When that kind of gun was around, we were still sword dueling.
Yes.
And then it wasn't until what you're saying, probably.
Yeah. I can't imagine two people going out with like a Beretta 9mm doing a duel. It just doesn't make any sense, you know? It's just not quite the same sort of thing.
Well, how about, the OK Corral guys? Ah. So the quick draw.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting variation on dueling.
Right, because you think of the duel as like pacing things off and then turning and shooting. And,
right.
Which, fortunately, between that method and what you're saying about the unreliability of the weapon itself,
there's
a pretty good chance you're not going to hit the guy.
Yeah, so from what I understand, a lot of duels were done simply to satisfy honor, and neither one of the guys expected to kill the other guy. They would just
basically showing up.
Yes.
Right?
The idea was to show up.
You want to puss out, and...
Yeah. So you're going to show up.
You've been challenged.
And both of you just kind of shoot up in the air,
Oh, sorry.
Or shoot into the ground. Or whatever.
However, then, never say that again about my wife. Exactly. And,
but then Otter is satisfied and you're done. But you still have the real, you still have the real threat that the other guy might actually shoot you. But then with the gunfight, the, like the Western gunfight, that's a different story because then it's just a question of how fast you are. Because the guns were reliable enough that it wasn't like somebody was going to try to shoot and, you know, the gun wouldn't fire or anything like that. They're accurate guns.
But it is still hard to hit a person at 50 feet. I mean, unless you're standing and aiming. You know what I mean? Like to quick draw, pull, shoot.
It's a skill for sure.
It's not going to be easy to hit a 3-foot target.
No, I'm a decent shot. And if I have time to aim, I can hit something pretty clearly. But that sort of thing, way, way beyond me. You have to really practice for that
yes.
kind of
and
skill.
Then, right, so you, to be able to quick draw, hit a target that size,
mm-hmm.
when they're not shooting at you.
That's bad enough.
It's hard.
Yeah, and when the other guy's trying to shoot you too.
Yeah.
You've got to be really fast.
Yeah.
And you've got to be really accurate. And so, those kinds of skills, the guy who can get the gun out of the holster, turn it, and shoot. Probably shooting from his hip, too.
Well, that's the other thing, right? So you're going to have a much better shot if you get it up, but by then you're dead. He's already shot.
By then you're dead.
He shoots from the hip.
Yeah, because the really good ones, from what I understand, would simply get the gun out of the holster, turn it, and shoot from the hip. And so they had to practice that kind of shooting all the time in order to be good at that. If I guess you're going to be in a...
What? So we were talking to the friend about the Broadway show Hamilton.
Right.
And, so we got into the Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr.
Yeah.
What was the beef?
So, gosh, I don't even remember what they were upset about.
Yeah, I don't either. But these were not two schlubs. I mean,
no,
this guy was...
These were top men.
He was already the Secretary of State. He'd already invented the banking system, right?
Yeah, exactly. These were not just like two hooligans on the street who come out and fight each other. These were top men. And... from what I understand, one of the guys expected just to, okay, we're going to do this for honor's sake and be done, and the other
you
guy...
You know how we do it.
Yeah, we go out, and we shoot in the air, we say, okay, we did it, and then we go home, we have a beer, you know? But no. He actually shot him dead.
And
then went out to celebrate afterwards.
Yeah, thinking that...
No
real consequences.
Like, no, you killed somebody.
And
that's bad.
And he's super famous. He's not a homeless
You're not allowed to do this. This is not the way we do things.
But President Andrew Jackson... insulted his wife.
Right.
However,
with
they weren't entirely wrong.
No.
Because so... She had a horrible marriage and just like ran away from the guy. And never got officially divorced.
So she was a bigamist.
The charge was not false.
No.
But if you think politics is nasty now, you're just not paying attention.
No, because it was really, really nasty.
It's always been everywhere you can think of. Roman Empire elections were nasty. Yeah. So anyway, yes. So, she's a bigamist. And he says, you, sir, I throw down the gauntlet. What is that? You throw a glove?
I don't know. You smack him in the face with a glove or something like that. And you challenge him to a duel. So, Jackson was not as good a shot as the other guy.
So he knew this. He knew going in.
Yeah, he knew going in.
But he's like, well, he insulted my wife. What am I going to do?
So apparently Jackson he's a thin man. And he wore a big coat.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Smart, to try to cover his frame, you know, hoping that the guy wouldn't...
The target wouldn't be quite right.
But the other guy shot him, and Jackson stood there with the bullet in him and shot back and killed the other guy, which was
his strategy.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't beat him to the draw.
Right.
I'll let him shoot first, hopefully he won't hit me, and then I'll fire back. But he did, right in the chest.
Right.
And now the other guy, though, he can't run away.
No, he's got to stand there and wait. Jackson takes careful aim and shoots him.
And kills a guy.
Yeah, that's pretty tough.
That is tough. What are you saying? What happened to that bullet?
He stayed in him with his whole life. He had that bullet his whole life. But imagine this. So you're the first guy.
I didn't think
and
about
you shoot,
it.
And you hit him.
And you hit him.
And you hit him. And you're like, okay,
he goes, all right, now it's my turn.
No, wait a minute. Didn't I just win? I just shot you. No, sorry. I'm going to stand here like a tough son of a gun and shoot.
Gosh, and now they want to rename Jackson, Mississippi.
I know.
I think that's a tough son of a bitch. And I should be worthy of a city named after him.
I know. He's a tough guy. So then we have one last category of this crazy...
Yeah, which I'm not sure how if it works in entirely. I've done my share of investigating of, and when I say investigating, I mean watching YouTube videos on European football hooliganism.
Yeah,
and it's awful, and it seems to ruin the game. And apparently, all the owners and players and everybody hates it.
Yeah.
And what the origins are, who you know, why it is the way that it is. Is awful, but I mean it does fall under the category of mutual combat.
Yeah.
You are fans of your football team and it can be obscure, basically minor league, be like the minor league baseball.
Right.
going
down to the Bowie Bay Sox.
Yes, and looking for the other fans, right? So you're not just going to go beat up mom and pop baseball fan.
No. You're looking for somebody who's there to fight.
Who's there to fight.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm kind of on board with it, except it does tend to escalate.
It messes up the family event for everybody else.
It does take place, well, not always. Often takes place outside the stadium.
Right.
So, and there's also then looting and breaking, tearing bar, trashing the bar next door, and fighting the cops and all of that. But I did see one where, and people bringing weapons. But I did see one where they would basically meet in a field, no weapons, equal numbers, and you can't hit a guy on the ground.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, now we're talking.
And again,
like duels, you meet off in some secret place because the cops get wind of it.
They'll
come break it up. But so most hooliganism is awful and ruins the sport. But there's a certain spirit of it that
And
I don't know. Okay,
so I guess to me the bottom line in all these things is there is a certain level of violence that we want in society, because if we eliminated all violence, well, the kingdom next door is not going to eliminate violence, and they're going to come kick our butts.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
we have to have men who are willing to fight and be tough.
I can't believe I'm so proud of this nation for having such a badass military force. While we try to raise boys as girls.
Yeah, like and the fact while that we say that you have to have a cry room and all this other kind of stuff.
Yes.
Comfy couch and all this, yeah.
Yes, so, good for us for not being complete wusses because, guess what? Other people around the world don't think like that and you'll just get run over.
Yeah, so, I mean, there was the whole question of Germany versus France in World War II, right? France had far better weaponry and a bigger army.
Right.
But the German men were trained to be aggressive, and the French men were trained to be passive.
Ah.
And, that's what you get.
And that's my thing. And even now, like just a mental picture, I think of the French as just being sort of effete and a Frenchie.
No, but that's not the way they always were.
No.
Under Napoleon, for example.
Are you kidding me? The war, the amount of war, I just don't think them as warriors. But... Historically, my God, the French were always fighting.
Yes, but for some reason,
I know.
After World War One, they just kind of wimped out.
And they're like, they're probably going, "Well, why is our reputation based on the losing one?"
And now you see the eBay ads: French rifle never fired, dropped once. right? Yeah.
That's mean.
I know it's mean, but you need sport. And sometimes somewhat violent sport to teach boys to put up with pain, to endure, to push through, to follow orders, to follow the rules, to, do what needs to be done.
Well, yeah, I tell you, that's very interesting because just today I got a text from my son. Well, I took my grandson to a lacrosse game. And he spent the whole time playing football. with his sister. They're just throwing and running. Yep. So my son tells me that they were somewhere where there was peewee football going on, which he had never seen before, the grandson, and was mesmerized.
Wow. By it. Good.
And just between you and me, he's kind of soft.
Yeah, right. So that and might toughen him up a bit.
I think that would be a good thing. Yeah. Right? I mean, he's the, if he gets pushed to the ground, he goes and, you know, needs comfort from grandma.
Right.
How about getting in, put a helmet on, and getting pushed to the ground 50 times?
Yeah. Get up, suck it up, you know, rub some dirt on it, get back in the lawn, you know? Right?
So, you know, I doubt anything's actually going to come of this, but I do, I at least like the idea that him observing it, seeing kids his age, roughhousing at that level,
getting knocked around,
that he didn't turn around and go, "Oh my God, that looks
so scary,
get me out of here!"
Right?
He was like, "I'd like to get some of that."
Yeah, so that's good.
That's good to hear.
That is good.
Okay, so I guess in the end, I'm saying that we approve of violence as long as both parties agree to it.
Yeah, and can't be go too far, you know. I'm not sure. I mean, some of these go a little farther than I would want to go.
Hey, good for them.
And we need men like that.
Yep.
You know, the men who go into special forces and go, you know, deep undercover in Afghanistan and shoot the bad guys. Right. They're not kids who played chess in high school.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, you know, at the end of the Florence, the Calcio Fiorentino, whatever that is, the Florence game.
Yeah.
They're talking to the guys. It's like the closing scene. It was just brilliant. He's playing with his son.
Mm-hmm.
And they now live in the suburbs of Florence.
Right.
He says, "But I made sure that my son was born in Florence."
Yes.
So in case one day he chooses to do that, but then he goes, "Who knows? He might be a ballerina." And then laughs it off. And I was like, "Well, that's the right attitude,
right?"
Exactly. It's like, look, he can do whatever he wants. But if he wants to enter this, I've made sure that he can participate. Fantastic.
All right, here we go.
All right.
Cheers.
Cheers.